Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and welcoming to the studio today, Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. They've been in business since 1960, and they have annuals, perennials, houseplants, pond plants, wildflowers, all kinds of things. Go online to johansons.com, and you'll see all the various things that they have there. And Karen? Great to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been a while. You've been a busy person.
Yeah, spring is always our busiest time of the year, especially May. So things are winding down a little bit, but June is still real steady. A lot of people still planting. And
you still have lots of great plants at your place?
We do. In fact, we still are. We grow things, so we're just putting things out that we grow for June. We're still getting in new product because a lot of people just don't get to it in May, or they find an place in their garden, they got to add a little bit. So we're still busy right now, all the way through the end of the month, into July even.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll give the number here for people to call in. If you have a question for Karen, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Boy, our hostas look great this year.
They like this kind of cool weather, and we've had enough rain to keep them going. Although the rain has been spotty, I didn't get a whole lot. I live in Fitchburg, and some places we got 3 or 4 inches. I got like an inch, and it was pretty dry all through May. But the hosta looks good. Vinca looks great. I think the things that are suffering are the plants that like to be really warm, like zucchini and cucumbers and the squash. Yeah, they're kind of just sitting there, but we'll get those warm days.
I think I may have mentioned on the air before, maybe not, but our flower garden in the back looks wonderful this year, and I suspect the reason is that we've got workers back there working and pounding all day, and the rabbits haven't been able to get at the cone flowers and those things, which we haven't seen in a few years, and now the garden looks great.
The rabbits are out in full force, and they are hungry. I think every other customer comes in, they're battling rabbits. Luckily, we've got a couple really good repellents. There are a lot of home remedies from dried blood that you can get the blood meal that works well. Mothballs, but we've kind of gotten away from recommending that. They're very toxic.
Yep.
We have a great non-toxic spray that we've been selling for several seasons called Liquid Fence. And you spray it directly on the plants. It smells horrible when you spray it, I will warn you. But it has worked really well. And nothing's going to be 100%, but that has been working great for people. And
Now, do you have to apply that, I assume, more than once if it rains or whatever?
Yeah, after a heavy rain or once a week, especially at first, to get the rabbits out of the habit of feeding in your particular garden, then you'll get them to start eating something else. So you spray it directly on the plant material. We also sell fox scent. And that's in a bottle. It's actually fox urine. And you put it in smaller bottles that have holes in the top, and you place them about every 6 to 10 feet in your garden. And they have rabbits have a natural wariness of fox, so they don't like that scent. So that's been working very well, too. So,
well, lots of people online. Let's go to the phones. Diane in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you. I have a question about transplanting. The feasibility of transplanting an ornamental maple tree that is rather close to the house. And it was here when we moved in. It's about 3 to 4 feet away from the house. And it's kind of tall, but it's gangly and overlapping the roof. Any possibility we could move this without killing it?
Well, definitely. It would have been best to have done it about 2 months ago as things are just starting to leaf out. Because now you're going to move it. The things are fully leafed.
Right.
And we're bound to get normal June temperatures in the 80s and 90s or even above. So the plant has a lot more leaf to support. If it is something that you could wait, I probably would wait to do it next spring or even early fall. Mm-hmm. I think spring would be a little safer. If you can't wait, I go ahead and try it. Get as much of the root ball as possible. And I would, after you plant it, I would treat it with a root stimulator starter plant solution. You can get those. They usually have a very dilute fertilizer, but they also have a root stimulator. And just remember, water, and then water it some more. Really soak it. Take a slow-running hose, like maybe running the width of the water coming out the hose, maybe like your pinky size, very mm-hmm. slow. Lay it at the base of the plant and let it run for a good hour to really soak up. And you'd probably want to do that a couple times a week unless we get a good half inch or more rain and try that. You may want to cut it back, but to be honest, I am not 100% sure about that. I'm not an arborist, and so maybe contact them. I don't know if I should recommend you cutting it back. If you're moving a shrub or something, I'd say definitely cut it back, but I'm just not sure on the maple. I got to be honest about that.
Yep.
And how much would one try to get out of the roots?
As big a root ball as possible. I mean, you know, nurseries move plants all the time, big trees. You know, they take a big spathe and they dig things up, so I would probably go, you know, if you could, 2 to 3 feet from the trunk and deep. But again, I'm not an arborist. I'm not sure how deep their roots are, but try to get a big root ball.
If you're okay. really worried, yeah, you might want to consult with an arborist on that one just to, because
yeah.
they could come in and take it out for you and move it for you. And they kind of know how to do that. And the equipment that they use is designed to do just that.
Yeah, I think you'd be definitely safer that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've done something either brilliant or terrible, and I'm hoping you can help me figure it out. I have a vegetable garden, and I've always liked to have some sort of mulch in the walkways between the vegetable rows.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used straw in the past, and mm-hmm. have had trouble bringing in weeds, and mm-hmm. and I've used grass clippings, and have not had much success with that. So this year I used some pine needles,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering, and the reason I did is there's going to be virtually no weed seeds in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if that will, will that break down anytime soon, or am I just going to have, pine needles for years and years now tilled into my garden?
Well, pine needles don't break down real quickly, and the other thing is they do add a little bit of acidity to the garden, which you certainly can correct. But what I would do is if you're tilling that in at the end of the year, I would definitely take a pH test, which you can do really simply at any garden center. You should be able to get a pH test kit, which are little test tubes. You put a little soil in there, you shake it up and match the color. And
right.
if you are a little bit acid, you could add a little lime. Or, of course, you could take a soils test on the University Soils Lab. It's about $15. It's a bargain. And they'll give you the pH plus all your nutrient. That would be the main thing that I'd be concerned about. Other than that, I wouldn't worry about it. If you're finding they're not breaking down, just rake them off and put on fresh ones next year. Don't necessarily till them in.
Okay.
All right.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. I always use the leaves. You know, it's so many leaves in our lawn. I use those as a mulch. Of course, be careful about working that into the soil because it ties nitrogen up when it starts decomposing. But
if you do it in the fall, though,
that's what
you work it in the fall. It's got all winter to decompose. That works well. Another thing that some my friends have done is they plant annual grass seed between the rows.
Yeah.
And then that makes a great green manure to till in the fall. Or you could actually leave it all winter to hold the soil and then till it in the spring. That'll break down. The other thing that people use is carpet remnants.
Yeah.
And drill holes in it so that the water will drain so you don't have puddles out there. But that has worked just for in between the rows, of course, not in between your plants.
Let's go to Darlene and Marcus Ann next. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had a perennial garden for about the last 25 years, and one of the plants that I just love is my lupin
mm-hmm.
and how it spreads and, grows. When I give plants to others, they have a lot more trouble getting the lupin to come back the following year. And so I found this bit of advice that seems to be, I guess, the gold secret on how to keep lupin. And when the plants come up in the spring, and the tendency is to, weed everything around the lupin so it can grow. But when you weed around the tiny lupin, that's what kills it. It just has to have the shelter of the grass or larger plants in order to grow. And so the good news, in the spring is don't weed. And it's wonderful.
Well, that's great advice.
You leave it go until it's about 5 or 6 inches tall. And then you can do your weeding, and the lupin is so strong, and it just takes over. But all you have to do is just leave it alone. Just leave it alone, and then it will come up wonderful. And I just love that plant.
Oh, that's great, because I love that plant too, and I never have a good answer for our customers to keep them going. Because like you said, they're hard to get through the winter, so that's great. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, yeah. Darlene.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call very much. And good advice. You can call in too at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 if you have a question for Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses, Madison. Diane in Milwaukee, you're next. Hi, Diane.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm looking for a bush that has some kind of berries on it that I can use for pie or just eating or jelly. And I don't know if it's elderberry or mulberry, and I don't know, are they both edible, or what should I get?
Well, there's currants, raspberries, and I'm not sure if elderberries.
Elderberries, yeah. Okay.
And I don't know about mulberries. That's one thing that we don't do at our greenhouse, to sell shrubs. But, blueberries, raspberries, any of those would be good. Currants are great, too, and they're fairly easy to grow.
Yeah, currants are good.
Okay, I'm just looking for either the other two.
Elderberry or mulberry. I got to be honest with that. I don't know a ton about either one of those.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Maybe we can do a little searching around here and find something out. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Don in Brill next. Don, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Say, I have a couple quick questions. I have a big area where there was a row of pine trees. I don't know, there was maybe 8-10 of them. But they were really all bad. They weren't taken care of before we got the property, and they just were, the bark was coming off of it. To make a long story short, we removed them all.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And my son-in-law has a skid steer. We managed to take the stumps out with the roots and all, and then we hauled in a little more dirt and tilled it all up and made it into lawn. The next part of the question I have a cabinet shop, so I have a lot of sawdust and shavings, and mm-hmm. Is it safe to put that over the soil?
I wouldn't. When you put sawdust down on a garden or a lawn or anywhere, when it starts to decompose, the microorganisms will start working on that, and they literally rob the nitrogen out of the top inch of the thing. So I think you're going to have trouble with everything being lime green and nitrogen deficient. So I would be a little cautious on putting fresh sawdust down. And I don't know.
You could compost it.
Yeah, if you composted it and let it break down a little bit, mix it with some soil and kind of do some layering and look up, you know, specifically how much to add. But I wouldn't keep putting that on fresh. I think you're going to run into all kinds of problems.
Okay. I haven't done so, and I just wanted to check. Well, I thank you very
much. Oh, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. It certainly can be mulched, though.
Composted, sure. And there's, like, probably recipes for that specific thing. You know, usually with composting, you're always doing layering. Add some soil, add some compost maker, add some leaves, and just, we call it a compost sandwich, so to speak.
Okay. Sally in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Sally. Sally, are you there?
I'm not hearing her.
Oh, Sally, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, yes. Sally.
Hi. I hope my radio doesn't bother. I just have a quick solution. I've had, ever since I lived here, I've had a family of rabbits in my backyard that just love that backyard because there's a lot of hiding places.
Uh-huh.
And they always have little babies. I see one regularly. If you have specific places you want to keep them out of, like your flowers, which they love, just take buy a few big bars of Dial soap, unwrap them, put them down wherever you want them to go, and they will steer clear.
Of the Dial soap?
Dial soap, just put it on the ground. It couldn't be simpler. You're out a few bucks, but that's all.
Yeah, I've heard Irish Spring, too, so that's...
I think Dial may be stronger.
That works good.
Know.
Well, great.
Thanks, Sally.
Good, you're welcome.
All right, Dial. Yeah, I've heard Irish Spring, too. In fact,
For deer, too.
We bought some Irish Spring last season, but it was later in the season. By that time, the rabbits had everything. Anyway, this year, with the guys in the back, they're pounding on the side of the house. We haven't had the rabbit problem, so I've got a couple bars of Irish Spring that'll probably get back out there next year. Joanne in Neshkoro, it's your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Some lady called wondering about mulberries.
Yes,
we've had a mulberry
you.
Tree for years and years, and I just love them.
Great.
Oh, okay.
The first pie I made, I used the blackberry recipe, and it came out like potatoes. So then I use a blueberry recipe now, and you can use mulberries, anything that for blueberries. The trick is you need to add a little bit of lemon juice.
Okay.
And I take my mulberry squares and stuff, the potlucks. I make mulberry muffins and everything. And I have people from the potluck that's a monthly thing saying, when are we going to get that mulberry stuff?
Wow.
Wait till the mulberry tree has mulberries on it.
All right.
And I use them I just eat them with milk and sugar on, and they're fantastic. You don't take the little stems off. There's little stems on them, but you just eat them. You don't even notice them.
And when do you get the berries? When do they ripen?
Oh, they'll ripen in about another month.
Okay.
Then they'll keep on coming. Don't plant it like in the middle of your yard, because they fall on the ground and you walk on them. And,
oh, okay.
And the birds get them, you know, and then you know what happens then. So plant it a ways out. But, mulberries are wonderful things.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joanne. Appreciate it. All right. We can eat mulberries, that's for sure. Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison, our guest. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Glad to have you listening in. We've got an open line, so you can get on at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Bob in Fox Point, you're next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I think I have a weeping willow. It's a rather large tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's been here at least 30, 40 years. And we lost one of them. They had just toppled over one day. It decided it's had enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to save this one. I want to know if we should trim the lower branch. There are several heavy branches that are on the low end of the tree. I wonder if we should trim those off. We should just leave it the way it is.
Well, I think if they're in your way, you certainly can trim them off. Otherwise, I would just leave it the way it is. I mean, that's the thing about willows. They're beautiful trees, but they're pretty weak wooded, and they can be kind of messy. But it wouldn't hurt any to trim them if they're too low and you can't mow around it.
They're not too low. I want to save the tree.
Yeah.
I don't think pruning it is going to have any effect on its longevity. They're going to just live so long and start to get older or weaker. I don't think pruning it is going to really make a whole lot of difference on that.
Anything I can do to enhance its longevity?
Well, during dry years, I definitely would make sure you keep it well watered. A lot of people forget to water their trees, and willows do like good moisture. And so when we don't have adequate rainfall, like for instance, right in Dane County, some parts were very, very dry all through May. We barely got any rain at all. And taking a nice soaker hose, putting it around the drip line and letting it run for a couple hours on a real low setting, you know, and making sure you don't let the thing get drought stressed, I think would be your biggest thing. And then watch for insects if you get any insect damage. I don't think there are any real specific ones that attack willows. They're pretty easy, but I think the moisture thing is your biggest thing. You could fertilize it, but trees typically don't need a ton of fertilizer. If you want to fertilize it maybe once in the spring and then leave it, that would be another thing.
Okay.
Good. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. First, just a comment with the Irish Spring. We heard that about deer, and we hung some of those from apple trees that we planted. And, well, it doesn't work for deer. Maybe it'll work for them.
Well, and that's the thing about repellents, and it depends on how hungry the animals are that are feeding, how much other food, how much they want. And that's why sometimes, you know, switching things up helps as well.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I called because I have a bed where I have a lot of sunflowers and castor beans and some perennials, and this spring something was just having a good time chopping all the leaves, and I looked on the internet, and I think it must have been some kind of cutworm or thing, and I saw about using BT, an organic pesticide.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about that, and how do you use it? And
well, BT is the initials for Bacillus thuringiensis, and it's great. It's a botanical. It's actually a bacteria that the worms will get into their digestive system, and it's very effective for tent caterpillars, for instance. But they eat it, and then they quit feeding for a couple days, and then they die. But the thing is about it is it's very, very specific, and it isn't wide spectrum at all. So you want to look at, first of all, you got to find out the critter that's chewing, and they don't work for everything. Like, for instance, the sawfly larva that attacks Mugo pines, no effect on that. So that's the limiting factor of it. It's good for gypsy moth, but it isn't good for other things. So you could try it, but trying to find the critter that's doing the chewing, first of all, and getting it identified if you want to try to use that. Because a lot of other things that are chewing right now, we've got a lot of earwigs, and it wouldn't have any effect on that. And so that's the limiting thing on it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Nancy in Baraboo. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I got a really quick question. About 5 years ago, I bought two rose bushes, planted one in front of the house, planted one in the back of the house, and for whatever reason, 3 years ago, this is the third summer, I had to dig up the one in the front, which had only been in there a couple of years, had been blooming in there, moved it out to where the other one is, and for now 2 summers, it's looking puny. This summer, it looks pretty good, but it's not blooming.
Okay. Are you sure that the, do you know what kind of rose it was? It grafted onto a hardy rootstock? Was there like a big knob on it? What I'm wondering is if the hybrid rose froze off, and is the foliage more ferny and smaller?
No, actually last year and the year before, it just didn't seem to grow very much, even though I was fertilizing. This year, it's looking better, but I bought it from the Bruce Company, and to be honest with you, I guess I really can't tell the difference, other than I know the one is, they're kind of like a bush-type rose.
Okay, but it's got no flowering or just little?
No flowering.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the hardy rootstock froze off. That's what, most roses are growing on a rootstock, and there's a big knob, we call it the graft.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what you might want to do, when you plant a rose in Wisconsin, it's good to bury that graft 1 to 2 inches under the soil surface. It makes them a lot more winter hardy.
Right.
But dig under there and see where that graft is, and see where the leaves are coming out. If they're coming from below the graft, just dig it up, because it's just the hardy rootstock. They don't really have a decent flower. If your growth is coming from above the graft and it's not making flowers, boy, I don't know. Did you prune it back this spring?
I didn't, because it didn't really grow very much. It only got like a couple foot tall. Well, not even that.
Well, and it would still probably bloom. That's what I'm thinking is happening. Like on a hybrid tree or grandiflora, we typically recommend pruning them back to about a foot tall in the spring, because it makes nice thicker canes. But if it's a shrub rose, you don't need to prune quite so severely, usually about a third. But I would look and see where that growth is coming, because if you're getting zero flowering, that might have been what happened.
Okay, you're saying the rootstock needs to be above the ground then?
No, I'm saying that the leaves, the growth needs to be coming above that graft. Otherwise, all you're getting is the old hardy, you're getting the rootstock type rose, which is not the ornamental that you want, and I would dig it up and throw it out. If you told me that you just got one or two flowers, then I would look at things like fertilizing and lack of sun. But the fact you're getting no flowers, I'm guessing that the ornamental rose is gone.
Okay,
and
so
all
I really
you're getting
need to just buy another.
That's
buy
what I'm
another
thinking.
One.
Yep.
Okay then. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yep. Time to visit Johansson's greenhouses or someplace.
We have a few.
I've had a few of them there.
Yeah.
Connie in Ortonville, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hello there. I am have some information for the lady who was asking about elderberries.
Oh, great.
She really doesn't need to plant any in her yard because they grow wild on fence rows out in the country, and they blossom around the 4th of July. So around that time, early July, take a drive out in the country, and it will be a shrub that's 3, 4, 5, 6 feet tall and a large group when they get to be that big. And they blossom with white flowers that's like a large Queen Anne's lace, kind of like a bunch.
It's exactly what they look like.
And then the berries are very deep, dark blue-purple, and they ripen around Labor Day. And the best way to do is take a big grocery bag and pick a bunch of the heads, bring them home, wash them, pick the berries off of the foliage then, and freeze them on a cookie sheet, and then pack them in your bags in the freezer for winter use. And they are a very strong berry, so the best way is to mix them half and half with apples, and then probably add an extra half cup of sugar over and above what you would normally put in an apple pie, at least a quarter cup, and with the two crusts. And the very dark color, they've got to be full of antioxidants, like, blueberries and blackberries.
Yep.
And they're free out in the country for the asking. Just stake out your patch on the 4th of July and go back and visit it on Labor Day and pick them.
All right.
And be sure to ask permission from the landowners that may own the land, because that's one thing somebody called me about just a couple of weeks ago, saying, you know, we own that property along the ditch line. And so you need to ask people's permission. But that's the one thing you need to do. Find out who owns them and go in and get permission, and there you go. Thanks, Connie. Good information there. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call if you have a question for Karen. And Elaine in Richmond Township is next. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I would like to know what deadheading means. I have spiderwort plants cropping up all over the place, and they are beautiful now. Mm-hmm. But I know they don't last, and the plant just gets to be wilty, rotten mess, you know, after a little while. And I would just like to be able to prolong the flowering.
Yep. Well, what deadheading is going in and clipping off all the old flowers as they fade. And if you always want to deadhead all your annuals, of course, because if you allow your annuals to go to seed, the annual thinks it's done its job for the year and it will quit producing new buds. Mm-hmm. Well, the same with perennials. You want to deadhead them, and a lot of times you can get a second and even a third bloom out of some of your perennials. So it not only keeps your garden neater and cleaner because you don't have all these old petals falling and causing, like you said, rotting, it also helps promote new blooming. The only thing you don't want to deadhead are things that you want to come back from seed, or things that are biennials like hollyhocks. You want to leave some so that the seed can fall, or the woman that called about the lupins, you wouldn't want to constantly deadhead that. You want to allow some of them to go to seed. But the spiderwort will spread from underground little runners, so there would be no problem clipping that back. And
yeah.
And sometime including deadheading, if your perennials are getting kind of gangly, don't just take the flower. Or you can just cut them back a little ways to make them more compact.
So where would you clip? Where you just pull off the dead flower?
Usually you just follow back to the petiole and where it meets the stem. And sometimes you can take part of the stem or just right where the flower meets the stem.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. Yep, thanks for calling. Shannon in Viroqua, I believe, is next. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I have two questions. My first one is, I have shrub roses that have a little lime green worm about an inch long that lives underneath the leaves.
He's busy right now.
And they're in a spiral shape
when
you find them. And so I'm hand-picking them, but is there anything else that I can do along the lines of something that's organic that can keep them away?
Well, they call him a rose slug. He's not a slug at all. I don't know why they call him that. It's actually the larva from the sawfly, one of the types of sawfly. As far as organic, you could try neem oil and spray that on the bottom. You could use pyrethrins, but just keep in mind that pyrethrins have a really short residual in sunlight. They break down very quickly. So again, you want to spray the undersides of the leaves and actually hit him, because it doesn't, if you don't actually hit the bug, he comes along and he crawls a few hours later. That chemical has the insect-killing properties have diminished. So, but pyrethrins would be another one. Rotenone is another botanical that is toxic. I mean, just because something's organic doesn't mean non-toxic.
Right.
You could try the insecticidal soaps. I don't know if that would kill him or not. Just be careful.
They usually work on soft-bodied things.
Yeah, if they're little. You know, I know the soaps, if he's real young, that might very well work. Just keep in mind spraying anything, but especially the soaps. Don't be spraying them in the heat of the day in the sunlight, because you can get damage to the foliage. But those would be some organics that I would definitely give a try.
And you said this is the larva of the
sawfly. There's lots of different types of sawfly, but he's called rose slug. And I don't know why slug, because he's not a slug at all. But, yep. And
well,
he's busy right now.
That was my easy question.
Great. Oh, okay.
My next one is, I made the mistake of buying a weedy herb and putting it in a mixed perennial shrub garden.
Oops.
It's called coltsfoot, and it's related. It's in the same family as pedicites, although it's not as big as pedicites. It's much smaller.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trying to eradicate it by just digging it out. It has a long root, and then it has many fine hair-like roots, and it seems like every root seems to leave every root in the earth seems to make enough for a new plant to sprout. So I've been digging it and digging it out and pulling out some perennials and just letting them go. And again, I'm wondering if there's anything I can do along the lines of something organic to get rid of it. If I have to resort to Roundup, which I understand, the is it glyphosate?
Yeah.
That's what's in Roundup, that that's what I need to use.
Uh-huh.
Is there a judicious way of using that? My neighbors will be very upset with me if I use it, but I don't know what else to do, and it's in about a 12-square-foot section of the garden, and it is going into my neighbor's yard.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing to know about Roundup, it is not organic.
Right, I know
But it
that.
Is one of the friendlier herbicides that you can use. It is biodegradable and it doesn't leave any residual. Supposedly, it's according to the Roundup people, it is gone in about 7 days. It breaks down quite quickly. And you don't get any soil activity. So in other words, even if you spray a little on the soil, the plants aren't absorbing that through the root system. It doesn't move in the soil. It is absorbed only by the leaf tissue. So you can use like a little foam paintbrush and actually just paint the things you want to get rid of. You could put buckets over your perennials and then spray it. But it only kills the things you get it on. So you don't have to use a ton of it, but it is not an organic. And that's pulling it or Roundup are the two things. There has been a lot of talk about using the horticultural vinegars, which is just vinegar, and that will kill a lot of the top growth of a lot of plants, and sometimes that's enough. The problem with the horticultural vinegars is it has not been licensed to use on plants in the state of Wisconsin, and so I can't really even give you advice as to how to use it. I just know you could look in the internet and see, and there are some people that are using it. We sell it just as vinegar. It's a 20% solution, and you can do with it what you want. But like I said, it doesn't have the labeling that is really required for us to be able to recommend it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 as we visit with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses. Flower question, give us a call, plants, mulch, whatever. Eileen, hi, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Actually, I thought of another question, too, while I was on the line, but they're both quick and easy.
Okay.
The flower buds on my lilacs, the dead ones now, should I have already cut those off?
No, you can certainly do it now, and if you want to prune your lilacs at all, if they need some shaping, now is an excellent time. You can not only take some of the total height of your lilac back, but you can also go in and thin your lilac from the base, taking out about a third of the growth. That's called renewal pruning, so you don't constantly do this haircut thing, because that's where all the new growth is going to come from. And now is certainly a good time. It's not too late at all.
Okay. Question number two is, I have a couple of shrub roses that I put in when we bought the house, which was probably six summers ago now. And yeah, they're huge. I mean, I don't do anything with them, and they've grown to be like 6 feet tall. It's really nice and bushy. You know, I don't really do much. I cut off the dead stuff in the fall, or I'm sorry, in the spring. Should I be cutting these back at all?
Well, that's kind of personal preference. I wouldn't cut them back now other than deadheading them, because now you're getting all your good blooming for the summer. But in the spring, if the thing is just too big, sure, you can take them back halfway, a third, just to more to contain the size, and that'll make a nice bushier plant if you just want it to be a little bit smaller. And I would do it more like the end of March into April in that neighborhood of time.
Okay, yeah, I was just wondering if it's something I should do to keep it healthy, because I really don't need to cut them back for size. I love them the way they are.
Then you don't have to cut much at all, other than what you're doing is taking off the dead stuff. I mean, I would maybe every few years take it back. I think you'll have a prettier bush. But other than that, nope, that's the beauty of shrub roses. They have pretty low maintenance.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, let's go to Pete next in Holman. Pete, hello.
Hi, folks. Really nice. I really like your program. I have a question about pesticide. I have, I live rural, and I have a problem with, it's been identified by an entomologist as a rose chafer beetle.
Okay.
And it's really a heavy infestation. They've just started. And I've applied pesticide 7. Is that how you pronounce
it?
Yep,
7.
And it seems to help, but I'm worried about how that affects wildlife, in particular like bluebirds, songbirds.
Well, seven is, the thing about seven is it's really toxic to bees, so that would be the thing I would be worried most about when you're using it. And as far as the toxicity to wildlife, that is kind of out of my realm other than what the label says. And on all pesticides, there typically are 1-800 numbers or websites that you can call and talk to their chemist and or get some safety data sheets that would give you more information. But the biggest thing that comes to mind with seven is bees.
Yeah, deadly on bees.
Yeah. And so and what I would do is when you talk to the entomologist that got that identified this for you, if he's got any other ideas. Eight is another one that we use a lot. It's just the number eight, the one that comes after seven. And that one doesn't seem to be quite as toxic, at least as the LD50 of it, which is how many milligrams per kilogram of body weight it takes to kill something isn't quite as toxic. But again, when you get into toxicities and all that, that's out of my realm. And I would talk to the chemists and things specifically at the companies that are producing them, and they'd be able to give you a lot more information on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Pete. Thanks for calling. Judy in Grafton, we'll get to you in just a second, but Karen Johansson, our guest today of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Glad to have you listening in. Judy in Griffin, excuse me, is next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a question about leaves on my columbine. I've noticed something, and I don't know if it's an insect or if it's a fungus or what it is. It almost looks like there's like little, like somebody took a pen and drew little squiggles on it.
Little tire tracks on them.
Well, yeah, what is that?
That's an insect, and it's a thrip. And the thing about thrip is they're so hard to control because they do. They bore right into the flowers of some plants, but are on columbine especially, they love the leaves. And your best thing to do is use a chemical that's systemic and that the leaf actually absorbs it to get him. And the one I would recommend is imidacloprid, and Bayer puts that out. It's called Bayer Lawn and Flower Spray, and the name of the chemical, I'll spell it for you, is I, M like in Mary, I, D like in dog, A, C-L-O, P like in Paul, R-I-D. Imidacloprid, and that's going to be your best bet. It's a medium toxicity chemical. It has very good residual, but the main thing is the leaf is going to absorb that, and so it's going to be able to get that thrip that's crawling around in your columbine.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see. Let's go to Joan in Kenosha next. Hi, Joan.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thank you for the show. It's awesome. I just have a quick question about my hibiscus, and I got one for my birthday like a while back, and it's just a red bloomer. It's nothing hybrid or anything, but it's done really well. Now it's very tall, and it's very leggy, but it never stops blooming. I brought it in. You know, I overwinter it. It blooms all winter long. It's like the leaves are gorgeous, but it's getting too tall, and I need to repot it, and I need to prune it, but I don't want to kill it.
Well, you certainly could repot it now. How is it outside for the summer?
Yep.
How often do you need to water it?
I water it when it's bone dry.
And is that every day? Or?
No. Well, it depends. You know, obviously it depends on how warm it is outside, but probably once or twice a week.
Okay. I don't think you really need a bigger pot for it then. If you told me it's bone dry once a day, then you might want to put it into a bigger pot. But if you're only needing to water it a couple times a week, I think I'd leave it in the size pot it's in for another season. You certainly could cut it back now, but the problem is now you're in your best growth, best blooming time.
Right.
So you're going to sacrifice that. So
I don't want to because it just blooms like crazy.
Yeah.
It's always bloomed like crazy.
I would cut it back, bring it in the fall, enjoy the buds that are on there for a while, and when it starts to drop leaves and kind of go into a pout, then I would cut it back, and rather severely. So anytime between October and the first part of January, you want to take that back about a half.
Right.
I really cut my hibiscus back severely. Whenever you cut them, you're going to sacrifice some buds.
Okay.
And it's painful, but it's going to make a much prettier plant.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Bob in Elroy, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yes, for the lady who was wondering what to do with her spider warts, I have a lot of spiderworts, natives, and others. If she looks at the top of the stalk, there's a cluster of buds, and a few of them come out each day. She should wait until they have all blossomed, till the entire clump has, cluster of buds has blossomed, and then cut the stalk back to about 8 or 10 inches above the ground. Leave quite a chunk sticking up for the whole mass of the spider warts, and then make sure they're watered, and she should get a whole second growth and a second crop of flowers later in the summer.
So you're cutting them back pretty severely, like maybe half?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. That's great advice.
Thanks, Bob.
You bet.
Appreciate the call. All right, some more good advice there. Yvonne in Columbus, it's your turn. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi. I have a question. I'm not sure if you can help me, but it's about grapes. We have these German wasps, and every time I try and harvest them, I get stung.
Oh.
So I don't know, is the only thing that I can do is netting or...
Netting for you?
Yeah, for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, probably.
I thought of there.
Boy, and I don't know if there's certain times of the day that they maybe wouldn't be as active. I'm not an entomologist, but I would try to go online and see if maybe at dusk or early in the morning.
I think either time, either early in the morning or late in the day is probably the better time.
You know, and I have been doing that, you know, for the years, but they just sit around there and they sleep.
I don't wait for you to come, Yvonne.
Boy, I don't think repellents are going to do you any good because they're kind of a, you know, sting and run type insect. So, yeah, I think I would just get some netting because that's got to be really painful.
It is.
You wouldn't want to spray the area you know, before you go in there because you're picking stuff to eat. So I think that's going to be your only alternative.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Sue in Westby was wondering if it's okay to use grass clippings without weeds as a mulch around her flowers.
Well, you certainly can. Just make sure there are grass clippings that you haven't used any herbicide like Weed and Feed or Dandelion Killer on. And grass clippings get kind of gooey if you have a lot of them. So I'd probably spread them out, let them dry a little bit, or just a very thin layer, or spread them out on the driveway, let them dry, and then sweep them up and use them as a mulch because they get kind of, like I said, gooey is the only word I can think of.
Okay. And here's another one. Can we use coffee grounds as fertilizer?
I hear that, but I don't really know what nutrient you're getting, and maybe somebody will call. That's not anything that we really recommend all that much. I don't know what nutrient would be in there, and I'm sure there's something, so somebody will probably call and let us know. But that one isn't one that I'm a big advocate of.
All right. Well, we'll take some more calls here. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Lots of callers online here, and we'll get to those callers in just a second. Is this a good time to plant potted roses?
Oh, sure. You can be planting any type of nursery stock, roses, trees, shrubs, and all of your annuals and perennials, things that are in pots. You're not digging them up and transplanting them, so there's no problem. Just the things to keep in mind is when you transplant, you need to water very thoroughly, and you need to water often until things get a chance to make a new root system. And when you're potting roses, planting roses specifically, is look for that graft that we talked about earlier, that knob where all the growth comes out of it. That in Wisconsin, we typically recommend burying that 1 to 2 inches under the soil surface. It'll make your rose more winter hardy. And you certainly have good success replanting them now. You want to dig a hole maybe twice the width and twice the depth of the pot and mix in some peat moss or composted cow manure or any composted leaves that you have to prepare the soil. Roses like a nice, rich, fertile soil.
Okay. And I'm looking up coffee grounds as a fertilizer. We'll get something on that in just a minute. What are the biggest pests, before we go back to Mary here, what are you hearing as people come in and talking about pests and so forth that are attacking their gardens?
Well, rabbits, which we've talked about, rose slugs, which somebody called in, and the next one that we're going to have is the Japanese beetle. And I talked to Phil Pelletieri yesterday, as a matter of fact, and there was their first adult beetle sighting, and that's early. Typically, we don't get Japanese beetles until the end of June, and they found one on campus here. So a couple things that leads to mind. If you've got trees like lindens and larch and birch, I've literally had stories of trees being skeletonized by these adult beetles.
Wow.
Now would be the time, if you want to treat for those with the chemical imidacloprid. It's the same chemical I talked about, the thrip on the lady's columbine, only you mix it up differently. You're not spraying the tree. You get the one that's formulated for tree and shrub. You mix it up in a bucket. The proper amount is determined by the circumference of the tree's trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the directions are on the label. You mix it up in a bucket of water and you pour it at the trunk, which is against everything. We used to always talk about the drip line where you pour, but this particular chemical is better absorbed right at the trunk. And what that is going to do is go up into the tree, and you need to get it on now, because if you wait till the end of June, it's too late. You need to let that chemical work its way into the tree. And it's not going to get rid of the beetles. It's just as they feed, it's going to kill them. So you're still going to have some beetles. You're still going to get new ones flying in. But I had a customer tell me that 2 years ago, his trees were totally skeletonized. He used this chemical last year.
Yeah.
And he had to literally sweep the beetles off the sidewalk below the tree. And, you know, it wow. really helped. So he still had the beetles, but it just lessened the damage. So that would be one thing if you want to try to protect on it. You need to get that on there now, like in the next few days. And that's the imidacloprid. It's a bare tree and shrub. Read all the directions. The other thing is, if you had a lot of grub damage from the Japanese beetles, grub stage, which you will start seeing in September after they lay their eggs in the end of August and then they start to hatch, you can treat your lawn now with the same chemical, only with a hose end applicator, and you treat now. It'll be there as soon as those grubs start to hatch in the fall. So there's two stages of this horrible insect yeah. that do a lot of damage. So that's the other pest that's up and coming. I'm getting a lot of damage from earwigs on my garden. My marigolds are just chowing on them. And,
they love marigolds.
They do. I've just got these little sticks. I'm going to have to replant some in for earwigs. That's a whole other thing. There's a lot of good chemical controls. The powders tend to work the best, like 8 in a powder. They come out and they feed at night. You don't see them. And then they hide during the day. And the earwigs will go underneath your mulch and under your shrubs. They like to hide in your mailbox, anywhere where it's dark and cool. And the powders tend to work the best. So for treating earwigs, not only treat the plant they're chewing on, but treat the ground around them. Or if they're in pots, you pick the pot up and dust right between the pot and the sidewalk. That'll help. And then there's a lot of good organic controls, too, for earwigs. You can try to catch them, so to speak. Rolling up moist newspapers. I'll go in there and hide during the day. Take that newspaper when they're all in there and put it in a bucket of soapy water. That's a good organic control. Diatomaceous earth is another good organic control. It's a looks like flour. You put it around the plants that they're feeding on, and the earwigs crawl through it, and yeah. it works kind of like miniature microscopic razor blades. It cuts their bodies up, and they dry out. So those are some of the things that we're seeing a lot now.
Well, let's take some more calls here. Jillia, I believe, in Fitchburg. We'll give you a chance now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Karen, I have a question about oriental poppy
mm-hmm.
and California poppy. Somebody gave me seeds last year. I forgot to plant them this spring, I mean indoors, to start them. So I wonder whether is it too late to plant them outdoor directly, or should I wait until the fall or next spring?
On the poppies, I'm not sure if they need a cold treatment to germinate. I would have to look that up in a book. But assuming that they don't need a cold treatment, you certainly could plant them now and they'll grow. They won't. Usually it'll take a couple seasons for them to bloom. If they are a type of seed that needs stratification, or in other words, the cold treatment, I would wait and do it in the fall, because then they can do it naturally, unless you want to look it up and you could put them in the freezer. You put them on kind of like sand and you make them cold and you simulate winter that way. So that, you know, you could probably do it now and just see if they germinate. Otherwise, save them and put them in the fall. I'd have to, like I said, look that one up.
Okay, and a quick question about the lilac done blooming. Is it the best time to trim them back?
Yep. Yeah, now is the time to prune any flowering shrub as soon as they are done blooming. So lilac, forsythias, actually they bloomed a long time ago, but certainly now is a good time, and you won't be in any danger cutting off the flower buds for next spring.
Okay, Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And took a look at from Sustainable Enterprise about coffee grounds. They say sprinkle used grounds around plants before rain or watering for a slow release nitrogen.
Nitrogen. Okay. Well, and nitrogen is always the biggest ingredient that is missing from our soils because it leaches so much.
Yeah, and they say you can add it to compost piles to increase the nitrogen balance as well. And they apparently break down fairly rapidly. So,
okay.
So there you have it.
And, you know, just as, you know, working in a business environment, you know, we always have a tendency to want to be able to sell things by the label and how much you use. And that's why some of the home remedies I'm not as up on.
Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouse is our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Glad to have her back, and certainly you can join in with a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Dick in Cross Plains. Dick, hello.
Hi there. I have a naturalizing rose in the middle of a long grass area here on the property, and in 10 years it's gone from about 3 feet high and 3 feet in diameter to about 7 feet high and 7 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of dead material down towards the bottom. Maybe only the top third to a half has leaves on it or is blooming now, and I was wondering how I should go in there and cut out some of that. I just went out and looked at it during the program, and it actually was creaking like a tree in the wind. And I didn't know whether I should. I've never done anything to maintain it. I don't water it. I don't fertilize it.
Well, it certainly wouldn't hurt it any to prune it now. It's just you're going to sacrifice all your blooming.
Well, I was thinking the dead material down below. Would it help to get rid of
that? Oh, sure. Yeah,
terms of insect potential or anything.
And it's always hard on a plant when you've got all this dead material that has to rot off, and it's just easier if you just take nice sharp prunes and they can, you know, cuts so that the wounds can heal, and it's much easier than having decay on a plant. So certainly if you can get in there and take out some of the dead stuff, and then I would next spring do a nice renewal prune and go in and take the overall height back, take out some of the oldest, heaviest canes, and you know, take it back about halfway and let it grow from there. I think you'll have a prettier shrub and it'll be healthier as well.
Okay. Cut it down by about half.
Well, don't just like chop the top of it off, but you can take the, you know, the top off and then take some of the heavier canes, and then if there's
the whole canes.
Yeah, and if there's anything dead, you know, follow that up. But right now, certainly take off anything that's dead.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling. Tom in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm the Creeping Charlie guy, and last year, Larry, I was listening to your show, and you had a homebrew recipe for Creeping Charlie that was using 20 Mule Team Borax, I think it was, and I just wasn't able to write it down at the time.
The Borax in the Mule Team, you know, definitely will kill Creeping Charlie, and at a certain level, it won't kill your grass, but we're very reluctant, and I've done a lot of research, the University of Wisconsin's website, the University of Iowa's website. We're really backing off on that. If you want to try it, there are some recipes online, but the biggest risk of using that is if you put too much on, borax or boron, which is the element that's actually doing the killing, doesn't leach from the soil, and it gets to a point where it will be toxic to your grass, and you might not have any grass there either for years and years. So you want to be really careful. You know, try it at some of these recipes, but go very lightly and don't use it year after year after year, because that's the University of Minnesota Extension's website really cautions it as well. So that's the big scary thing. Might, if you don't want to use any chemicals on your garden, a couple of things I could recommend is try digging it up. Try thickening your grass with fertilizer. There's a lot of good organic lawn foods, milorganite, which is a byproduct of the sewage industry. There are also organic fertilizers that come from poultry and soybeans, stuff like that. Try to thicken your lawn. Try to reseed it. So no matter how you decide to kill the creeping Charlie, whether or not you try the borax method or you try a traditional herbicide, make sure you're reseeding the area with grass seed to thicken it. Otherwise, it just comes back. You got to keep adding good competition. Raise your mower blades. Most people mow their lawn way too short. You want to raise your mower blades up to about 2.5 to 3 inches high. And all those things will help make a thicker lawn, which will reduce all your weeds. And the other thing, do you have the creeping Charlie in the shade?
It's everywhere.
Okay. Cause it,
shade or sun.
Because it grows better in the shade than grass does. So that's the other thing we got to just keep in mind, that it's kind of an unnatural thing to have a really thick lawn in the shade. And sometimes without a lot of seeding and fertilizing, it's hard. So if you decide to use a borax, the 20 Mule Team, boy, I'm not advocating it. I'm not recommending it, because you might not have anything there for years.
We did have one person who lost her entire lawn.
Yeah. So
that is
very, very scary. One other note for people that are listening about Creeping Charlie, the best time to kill it is when it's just starting to bloom. So like a couple weeks ago, you certainly now can still use a traditional herbicide on it because it's been cool. It's just in the heat of the summer, it starts to callus over and it doesn't absorb an herbicide as well. The other thing, if you decide to go to the herbicide method, keep in mind that they're absorbed through the leaf tissue. So don't mow the day or two before. You want nice leafy surfaces that can absorb anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know. I really worry about the 20 Mule Team recipe.
Okay, well, appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. You know, I tried it last year on just a small spot.
Sure.
I thought I'd just try it out. It just killed it instantly, practically.
If you get it just right, it kills it without killing the grass. The scary part is if you get too much on there, then you kill your grass.
That's why I tried it out of very small.
And then if you're successful and you do use it, make sure you reseed with grass seed and thicken it up.
Let's go to Garth in Eau Claire next. Hi, Garth.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
What an awesome show you've got. Actually, I'm from Palm Harbor, Florida. I'm just driving through.
Oh, all wonderful. Right.
But I've got a question and some advice for the lady with the wasps.
Oh, great.
As far as bees, wasps, and hornets, typically they can't sting in the dark. They can't sting in the cold, which is usually below 50 degrees, so that's out now. They also can't sting in smoke. And that's where I've overcome bees and wasps. I'll roll up newspaper. You might have to experiment just how tight you want it. You want it fairly tight, because what it's actually going to do is it's going to smolder and make a bunch of smoke.
Oh.
And you just wave it through the area and get the area smoky, and the bees and wasps can't sting.
Wow.
And my question is about a honeysuckle. And can I move a honeysuckle?
Is this a vine or a shrub?
A vine.
Okay.
It was planted at the base of a 4x4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now a honeysuckle pillar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to move the 4x4 with it.
Okay. The best time to move any woody-type vine or shrub is in the spring, like the end of March, beginning of April. And we always recommend cutting it back rather severely, like a third or a half, so there's not so much growth to support, and then using like a root stimulator along with a fertilizer. Those are pretty hardy. They're not real fussy. So if you want to move it now, you certainly could try. Just make sure you keep it really well watered after you move it, and I would definitely cut it back. So you are going to sacrifice the blooming, because the vining honeysuckles are just starting to come into bloom now. But if you need to move it, and you can't wait till next spring, then go for it. But I would sacrifice the blooming and cut it back.
Okay. Yeah, I had a feeling that's what you're going to tell me. But one problem I have is it's in Florida.
Okay.
So it has more than one spring. It blooms, I think it's about 3 times a year.
Oh. Then I would go for the cooler part of the year. So I would do it more like November, December, when they're going into their cooler part of their season, rather than doing it now because they're just going into the heat, because it'll be less stressful for it.
Okay. How much root do they typically have?
They don't have a real huge root system, so just try to dig down there with a shovel. Yeah.
Just as much as I can.
Yeah, as much as you can get. Where's Palm Harbor?
Clearwater.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I'm actually a Gator. I graduated from University of Florida, and so it's different climate down there.
Definitely, yeah.
Thanks, Garth.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. And, you know, you can always listen to us back in Florida. Just go to WPR.org online and you can listen to us. Lots of people do.
Wow.
Lorna in West Salem, it's your turn. Hi, Lorna.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have some mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
That are, we had like three elm trees in our backyard that died several years ago. And now this year I'm noticing a lot of mushrooms that are growing in that area.
Yeah, and what that is it's just Mother Nature doing her thing. And the mushrooms, there's spores there, and as the wood underneath is decaying from the elm trees that you cut down, it just makes mushrooms, and especially when we have periods of heavy rains, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's no preventative. All you can do is go out there with a rake and rake them off so that dogs or kids or nobody eats them.
What do they look like?
They kind of grow up in a cone shape.
Okay. Do they sort of look like cheese or like almost like a little brain tissue?
No.
Oh, not that.
No.
Oh, okay.
You're hoping there are morels.
I was wondering because the morels, that's typically where morels grow is around dead elms.
Dead elms, yeah. You wouldn't want to get rid of those.
Well,
but
I don't know then because I've got mushrooms in the front yard too, and that was not an elm tree that we cut down.
Okay.
And those are the cone-shaped ones, but the ones in the back are actually kind of growing under my deck.
Well, if you're not sure, you might, if you think they might be morels, you know, mm-hmm. take them into somebody that really knows, because you definitely don't want to eat any mushrooms if you're not 100% sure, because
right.
they can be really toxic. But if they're not an edible type, then just rake them off and get rid of them. There's just not a lot you can do about it.
Will they ever quit growing?
Yeah, eventually. They're going to stop when all the spores are gone and the wood underneath there has decayed fully.
Okay.
But it might be a long time, and you might have some seasons where you don't see them, and then the next year you get tons of them. A lot of it has to do with the weather.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Yep, thank you.
Bye-bye. And Jean in Grand Chute, hello to you.
Yes, hello. I have a great many purple coneflowers,
mm-hmm.
and lately, the last few years, every year they're getting thrips in the flower head. They're not blooming yet, and I'd like to know what I can do ahead of time to prevent them.
That is really frustrating because it just ruins the flowers. And I would use the chemical I've talked about a couple times already today. It's imidacloprid, and it is packaged by Bayer. Just
by
like
the aspirin.
By the aspirin people,
oh,
B-A-Y-E-R, and it would be their rose and flower spray.
Okay,
and
you
could
spell it again?
I M like in Mary, I D like in dog, A C L O P like in Paul, R I D, imidacloprid. And it's packaged by Bayer. It's in a blue bottle. Bayer puts out all kinds of things now, so just make sure you look at the label and you get the right one, and it's their rose and flower spray that you can use on your ornamentals, and I would recommend spraying about once a week.
Okay.
And don't spray in the heat of the day. Don't spray your plants if they're drought stressed, so make sure they're fully hydrated because you don't want to get damage from that, from the chemical. But we use that chemical a lot, and you don't typically get a lot of damage to your plant material with it, so it works pretty well, and it actually will soak into the bud and give you some good protection. If that doesn't work, then I don't have a good answer for you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're
all
welcome.
All right, thanks a lot, Jean, for calling. Christina in Verona, hello to you.
Hi. I like the gentleman from Florida and from out of state, and passing through. I live in southwestern Missouri, down by the Arkansas border, but I was listening to your discussion about the creeping Charlie.
Uh-huh.
And it really sounds like what's taken over my yard.
It has a little blue flower on it.
Kind of a purplish.
Yep.
Okay. I'll have, now that I know what it is, maybe I can get rid of it. Also, might be too late down there because it's been in the 90s all week, but I have some hickory trees that I ordered from the Department of Comfort at Conservation. And we planted them, and they had decent roots on them, but they haven't gotten any leaves or anything on them. They're only about 1 to 2 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
When did you plant them?
The end of March.
Boy.
Whoa.
I would scrape the bark and see if it's green underneath your fingernail or kind of bend it. If it snaps real easily, I think they might have died. But if you scrape it and you have some green I would water the heck out of them, you know, slow water. You're kind of cutting out just a little bit, but try to water the heck out of them and cross your fingers. But boy, if that's a long time for them not to have leafed out.
Yeah, all of our understory trees did really well, our dogwoods and everything, but the hickory trees haven't done anything.
Okay.
So. All right, well, thank you so much. I'm enjoying your show.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Christina. And, all right, so we've heard from Missouri and Florida. That's good. Joe in Wausau. Let's go to Wisconsin again. Hi, Joe.
Hello. The insecticide imidacloprid that you recommended for that lady's purple coneflowers, that was implicated as a possible cause in the vanishing colony disorder of honeybees.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a cause of disorienting them.
That I don't know anything about. It is a pesticide that has been recommended really widely. Phil Pelletieri, the entomologist here at the university, recommends it. So that is out of my realm. I appreciate the call, but I don't know about that.
All right. Something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope it isn't. That isn't true, because it has been a really good pesticide for a lot of garden pests.
Well, thanks, Joe. Thanks for calling. Rick in Madison, you're next. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a question about two questions. One about Heliopsis.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's Heliopsis is infestated with these little bugs. They're red. And they're congregated on each stem, about maybe a quarter of the way up. And they seem, as they multiply, to migrate down the stem towards the base, but not leaving the top. In other words, it just seems to accumulate from the top down.
Are they bright red?
Yes, they are. They're very small, about a pinhead maybe. Maybe a tad bigger than
that. Okay. I don't know for sure what those are. They could be juvenile box elder bugs.
Oh.
And if that's the case, they really don't hurt anything. They're just more of a nuisance.
They don't look like they're eating anything.
Yeah.
They just congregate them on each stem. It's very wild.
I'm going to guess juvenile box elder bugs, but I'm not sure. If you are close to the university at all here, you could take some into the UW entomology and have them identified. And if that's what they are, you probably don't need to do anything.
Okay. And then, thank you. The second question has to do with, I think, a silver maple.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mature tree, and it's it loses leaves and clumps in the early part of, say, a couple of months, or maybe a month ago. You know, single leaves, just after they would come out, they'd just fall, and they'd be, you know, good, bright green leaves. And then recently in the wind, they've been coming down, you know, in clumps as, you know, part of branches and, you know, how they grow.
Yeah.
Maybe five or six to a clutch, if you will.
Is this an old tree?
Maple?
Yeah, the silver maple. It's an old, mature tree?
Yes, it is.
They don't have a real longevity. I'm just wondering if it's starting to decline, and they're very soft wooded trees. They're beautiful, but that's their limiting factor, is that they are kind of a weedy tree. They also, sometimes their roots can raise havoc with septic systems and things. It could be starting to die, and I don't know for sure. You might want to call an arborist out to come out and look at it and see if there's something that you can do to prevent it, but it might just be old age setting in on that.
Okay. Yep. Very well. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And Bob in Lancaster, your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Oh, good afternoon. I've got some young Mugo pine bushes alongside of the house, and they were doing fairly well. And two of them are still doing great, but two of them are being skeletonized.
Yeah, there's a bug out there. If you look, you've seen a lot of worms on it.
And I hadn't looked close.
Oh, yeah, they kind of camouflage, but if you look, sometimes the branches almost look like they're moving. You get so many worms on there, and that's a different type of sawfly, and it's a sawfly larva that happens to love mugo pines. When they're very young and immature, you can use the soaps on them. The insecticidal soaps are effective if you want to try an organic remedy. Once they get more mature, the soaps don't work as well. Then we recommend using something like the product 8, which is permethrin, and that works pretty well on them, but they can do a ton of damage in a really short period of time, so I would try to remedy that. They could be gone by now, because I started seeing those. We had customers coming in with that almost 2 weeks ago, so see if you still see the worms, but they're big enough to see. They're a good inch and a half long, and if you're squeamish at all, don't get too close, but luckily they don't hurt you. But if you still see them, you certainly can spray. The woman that had called about Bacillus thuringiensis, the organic BT, that does not work on them, so that isn't going to help you.
All right.
All righty. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. And Don in Ashland, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hello, Larry. Say, this guy that's got the Creeping Charlie, if you get a bottle of chlorine bleach and just spray that on him, it'll take care of it in a hurry.
Okay, and it doesn't affect the soil or the grass?
Nope.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you advocate that. I'm a little squeamish about that one, but I don't doubt it doesn't kill the Creeping Charlie.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Chris in Appleton. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
I'm not sure if this is more your field because it's about earwigs. I have a nasty little problem, and they kind of started in my garden, and now they want to become a new roommate with me. And
yeah.
I'm not,
yeah. Yeah. Earwigs, they're coming. The reason they want to be your roommate is they hate the sun. They like cool, damp environments. What you want to do if they're coming into the house, there isn't really anything in there that they eat other than they're seeking the cool environment. So you want to try to caulk around your windows, check your dryer vents, around your door jams. Just try to physically keep them out. And if that isn't working, you can resort to different pesticides, 8 being one that is labeled to treat the foundation of your home and try to kill them that way. It just depends how much pesticide you want to use right around the home. But physically try to keeping them out is your best bet.
Okay, what about the ones that are still outside? Is there anything I can do, or just should I leave them be?
Well, the thing about earwigs is they are beneficial somewhat. They do eat some insects, but on the other hand, they can skeletonize your plants. So if they are bothering your plantings, certainly you can use different pesticides on them. 8 is a real good one. Treat their hiding places. Treat underneath, like pick up pots and...
Okay.
Treat the bark. If you want to do an organic thing, try to just catch them in rolled up newspaper that's moist, and they'll hide in there during the day when the sun comes out, and then take that and throw it in a bucket of soapy water to try to kill them.
All right.
Okay. 8 is in the number?
Yep. It's spelled just like the number, and the chemical name is permethrin, but it's usually sold as the product 8. It comes in a liquid. It comes in a powder. The powders tend to be a little more effective because the earwigs will actually get it on their bodies and take it back home with them.
Okay. Right. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Karen, boy, the 90 minutes flew by.
It does.
You answered a lot of questions. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and do it again.
I sure will. It's a pleasure, and it always is a good brain teaser. It keeps me sharp.
Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Tell you what, go online to their website, Johansson's, that's JohanssenS.com, Johansson's.com, and you'll find out all about Johansson's Greenhouses there. Great to have her with us. Next week, by the way, on Garden Talk, you need to gather your haiku and chill out with a vicar of veggies, Professor Jim Nienhuis, will be with us on Garden Talk next week. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.